much more human traits. I noticed that he was very fond of photography. And I've recently heard that there were some 200 negatives of photos which he took on this tour, including many of myself and of him, and myself taken with his camera back to another person. Some 200 negatives which he's left behind, which are being made available to the FWBO to make new prints from. So thereafter, having really got to know each other, we collaborated regularly. We met quite often. And, we faced all sorts of problems together. I won't go into details, but I'll just tell you one little incident. You may remember, or maybe you won't because you're relatively young, most of you, but in 1962, China invaded India. And we were in Kalimpong. And a lot of people were convinced that, the Chinese were just going to take Kalimpong, and going to take Silicon, and going to go down to Calcutta. Those were the rumours that the Chinese wouldn't stop in Assam. But anyway, there was a great deal of turmoil in Darjeeling and in Kalimpong expecting the invasion. And two Buddhist friends of mine, a local wealthy businessman and politician and his European wife, had a jeep ready and waiting day and night, stocked with provisions. And I was to have a seat on that jeep, and we were going to make a quick getaway if the Chinese did turn up. So that's just to let you know what it was like. But the local people, the Nepalese, on the whole, weren't very displeased to hear that the Chinese were coming, because they didn't particularly like the Indians. The Chinese had worked on them through their propaganda and agents, and the local people were getting really quite ready to almost welcome the Chinese if they did come. So what we heard was that the officials in Darjeeling, Kalimpong coming within the Darjeeling district, weren't very happy about this. And the local police, the police in Kalimpong, especially the frontier officer, who was a friend of mine, were told that there had to be a spontaneous anti-Chinese demonstration in Kalimpong. So this frontier inspector came along to myself and to Dalgyu Rinpoche as the two most prominent and active local Buddhists, although we were eminent Buddhists of the border area, and said the DC, the deputy commissioner, is very displeased. There hasn't been a spontaneous demonstration, anti-Chinese demonstration in Kalimpong yet. We've got to have one, and you've got to speak at it, and you've got to denounce the Chinese, and you've got to say very clearly that they've committed aggression against India. That was an order. So Dalgyu Rinpoche and I said, yes, sure, fine, yeah. Do whatever you like. So this public meeting was organized. And I must explain that before that, we weren't permitted to say a word of criticism about China, about the Chinese government. China had invaded Tibet in 1950. We weren't allowed to criticize China publicly for that. And I certainly wasn't, because I was a foreigner. But anyway, now we were given carte blanche. So Dalgyu Rinpoche and I had a little discussion between ourselves what we were going to say. He would say it in Tibetan, I would say it in English. Mm. So this big public meeting was called. And, we sort of dealt with the situation in our own way. And I can't remember exactly what I said, but we said more or less the same thing. And we said, how regrettable it was that, yes, China had, invaded India, committed aggression. And yes, wasn't surprising, it had invaded Tibet. We hadn't been allowed to say that before. Yeah. It had committed aggression against Tibet. And we were very happy that at last we were able to say so publicly. So the point was well taken, I think, by the local authorities. We made it clear that formally we had been gagged, but that we weren't going to be gagged any longer. If they wanted us to condemn the Chinese invasion of India, fine, but we were going to condemn the Chinese invasion of Tibet at the same time. So this was just a little example of the way in which Dalgyu Rinpoche and myself worked together. Also, yes, another point I must make was that we were virtually ordered by the authorities not to leave Kalimpong, because we were the two best known Buddhists there, and they said if you two leave Kalimpong, then there's going to be a bit of a panic. The Indian officials, of course, were leaving. We had to stay and reassure the public, at least the Buddhist public. But perhaps I'm digressing somewhat. From Dalda Rinpoche, I eventually received the White Tara initiation and also the Bodhisattva ordination. We translated a few Tibetan texts together. And the last time I saw him personally was in 1967. But we kept in touch, and quite a number of order members and mitras visited him over the year, and our charity Aid for India has given very substantial help to Rinpoche's school. As I think most of you know, Rinpoche unfortunately died earlier this year, and Suvajra is engaged in writing a biography. He's collected quite a lot of material. Perhaps I should also mention that though Dalda Rinpoche was so deeply versed in both the theory and the practice of Tibetan Buddhism, he was very critical of certain aspects of Tibetan Buddhism. I won't go into that in detail now. He was also, I must say, very unpopular with Tibetan officials after the big exodus of refugees from Tibet into India. Tibetan officials had the idea that all the Tibetan refugees should remain under their own feudal control, and that the government of India should operate with regard to the Tibetan refugees only through them. They wanted almost to create a sort of state within a state, which the Tibetans themselves were not at all happy with, because many Tibetans were very dissatisfied with the type of government which then existed in Tibet before the Chinese invasion. Not that they had any sympathy with the Chinese at all, but they were very critical with regard to their own government and administration. They had the greatest devotion to the Dalai Lama, but they very much resented the very high-handed and autocratic behavior of the officials and aristocrats and administrators. And Dalda Rinpoche was one of those who quite openly criticized the officials. And they were so upset and so annoyed about this that they tried to denounce him as a Chinese spy. Mainly because his father was Chinese, but with his customary dexterity, he evaded all those difficulties and effectively became an Indian citizen. I'll just conclude with a little story about Dalda Rinpoche, which illustrates his sense of humour. He had a great sense of humour, which many Tibetans, in fact, don't have. They have a sense of fun, but not exactly a sense of humour. Dalda Rinpoche told me this story himself. He was often consulted or approached by Western scholars. He helped some of them a very great deal. For instance, Nebesty Wekowicz, who is also a friend of mine. He helped him in that massive compilation, The Demons and Oracles of Tibet. This has recently been reprinted. Anyway, these scholars used to visit him, seeking information. So one day, one of them went along to see him with another friend of ours as interpreter, Prince Peter of Greece, who spoke Tibetan very fluently. So sooner or later, the person, the visiting scholar, started asking Rinpoche questions about the Tantra, especially about the Anuttara Yoga Tantra, the highest Tantra, the secret Tantra, the Tantra of sex. So Rinpoche told me that he told a little Tibetan story which was the parallel of the gospel saying or parable of not throwing pearls before swine. And the visiting scholar was not very pleased. And Prince Peter was not very pleased. So apparently the scholar said, ah, well, I don't suppose he knows anything about the Tantra anyway. So Rinpoche told this story himself, and after telling me this bit, that, oh, well, I don't suppose he knows anything about the Tantra anyway, he burst out laughing. He thought it was the greatest joke. In fact, I think he told me this story more than once. He was a